Five hosts, four divisions, all battling it out for the Holy Grail of the American Hockey League, the Calder Cup. This is the Holy Grail Podcast. Here are your hosts, Zach Power, Andrew Rinaldi, Corey Swartz, and Dina Weinheimer.
Hello there, and welcome to episode 69 of Field Pass Hockey's AHL podcast, The Holy Grail. This is the episode for May 24th, and we are here to give you a recap of the last week in AHL hockey, and oh boy, do we have some action to bring to you guys. But we're going to start off with a little bit of an introductory question for, as you see, there's only two of us here. We're a little shorthanded, but you know, we're just bringing all the more heat for you guys. But I'm going to start off here, and Corey, who's your favorite three-peater, Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant?
I'm not much of a basketball guy, to be honest with you. I'd go Kobe all day long there, honestly. I mean, it feels mean to say that, you know, it's more relevant to me just because that was like the era I grew up in. But like, obviously I'm not a huge basketball guy, but you know, I know so many people that just have, you know, utmost respect for Kobe Bryant. And it's just one of those things, you know, he even, you know, I believe if memory serves, one of the tidbits I do know about him was that he actually played some of his basketball in Hershey as he was coming up when he was younger, as I believe the trivia some people, you know, that were around for it bring up to me a lot. So I always like to have that one in my back pocket. You know, Gordie Howe's sentiment that, you know, anybody who's anybody maybe applies to basketball a little bit as it does in hockey. I mean, we have Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game that happened in Hershey, and we have, you know, Kobe Bryant spending some time in Hershey. So, you know, again, it goes to hockey and it goes to life, honestly, too.
Yep, gotta respect the Mamba. I like it. And he did go to Lower Merion High School. I don't know if that means anything to you, but yep, drafted right out of there to the pros, and the rest is history. But yeah, Andrew Rinaldi over here on the Wolves and Griffins beat. I gotta go with Jordan, though. He's the GOAT. And if you guys at home are wondering why we're talking about basketball on an AHL podcast, well, we have our own guest who is aiming for his own three-peat, and we will bring that to you in just a little bit. But for right now, we got to get over a little bit of news before we dive into some playoff action here. Now, if you're like me and you enjoy watching the downfall of all things Toronto hockey, well, there was some stuff that went on with up at the top and with the Maple Leafs, and we're starting to feel the ripple effect of that and down in the AHL as well. And it was announced earlier this week that head coach Greg Moore is out from the Marlies, along with assistants AJ McLean and John Snowden. Now, this news comes on the heels of their third round sweep at the hands of the Rochester Americans. Corey, I mean, the Marlies had a great regular season, but how do you feel about this move from the Toronto organization?
It's an interesting one. I mean, it's always kind of interesting. Like, you always feel like when like a coaching staff gets fired, right? It's like, you know, it's usually, you know, I think back to, you know, the one time the Bears made a, you know, when they let Troy Mann go back after the 2017-18 season, you knew that heads were going to roll. The Bears had a lousy season, you know, not, I still maintain that most of that's not Troy's fault. You know, obviously I'm going over to Hershey to answer a question about Toronto, but you know, it's not that kind of season where you expect everybody to, you know, be fired in such short order too. I mean, it shocks me a little bit because it's not like they had a bad season. You know, it's, they got dealt a poor hand. I'm sure if Zach were here, he'd be chomping at the bit to say that, you know, that so many of their lineup got diced up and sent out over the trade deadline and stuff. A lot of stuff is out of their control. So, I mean, you know, I know there's a new regime that's most likely coming in with the Maple Leafs, and, you know, maybe they want to give them the full freedom to hire their own guys as they see fit. But it's kind of like, you had a great season and did what you could. Here's your reward. You're fired, you know, days after the playoffs. And it just kind of is, it baffles me a little bit. And I just don't think it's deserved for this kind of season, you know, the hand that they were dealt, certainly.
Yeah, you know, even though I just came on here throwing shots at the Toronto market, I got to agree with you on that one. I mean, is this just the nature of the league where the Maple Leafs were going all in, so they kind of deal out a lot of these players that were real big pieces for the Marlies. So you're rolling into the playoffs with kind of a skeleton crew, and they get through Utica, but they just kind of run into this buzzsaw that's Rochester. Now, I think maybe if they push that series to five games, or they maybe just look a little stronger on the defensive end, maybe we're looking at this different. But I do think that with the changes made up top, probably going to want their own guy in there. Greg Moore and Kyle Dubas are kind of two peas in a pod. So you chop the stalk off, well, the other peas are going to be coming in with it. So a tough hand. I don't think Moore is going to be unemployed for long. I just think he just got kind of a raw deal here, and this is the nasty business part of this sport, where you have a great season, and even if you didn't end on the best terms, I mean, you got through a tough opponent in Utica. Things just didn't fall your way in Rochester, and so get your pink slip after that one feels that's Toronto. You know, it's either success or it's, you know, go upload your resume on LinkedIn. So, like I said, I don't think Coach Moore is going to be unemployed for too long, but we'll see about that. Now, I don't know about you guys at home. I'm ready to talk some playoff hockey. That 3 minutes of news is all about that any one of us can take. So, as usual, the Atlantic is kind of our front runner, our vanguard here, and who better to talk about that Hershey and Hartford series than the man that's already got two Hershey jerseys in frame, Corey? Well, the clock struck midnight on those Hartford Wolfpack, huh?
Yeah, it was a little shocking to see, in a sense, to see that Hartford run kind of end as they did. I know there was, you know, a lot of talk that Hartford could probably handle Hershey. Hershey and Providence kind of played a very similar style of games, which is what made all of those games between Hershey and Providence so fascinating, right? And, you know, the Bears kind of collared the Wolfpack, I guess is probably the right way to put it, in a sense, because the Bears had, you know, no deficit. It's such a bizarre thing to me, because in the regular season, the Bears were not known for being comeback kids, right? And here in the playoffs, they've done it several times now, including in game three, where they went down 1-0 early. And, you know, I talked about it on a different podcast earlier this week. It felt like they just take their opposition, the Bears do, and put them in like a sleeper hold, right? Where they almost don't even know they're in a sleeper hold at this point, where they just sort of are, you know, they're trying their best, you know, they're slowly running out of energy, and the Bears, you know, they're getting in front of their shots. They're limiting their grade A chances. They're, you know, reducing, you know, their quality of chances just going down, you know, lower and lower. Wolfpack got on the board first in game three off a great play from Ryan Carpenter to a Turner Elson in front of the net, where, you know, he was able to get one of those grade A's, but it felt like that was almost the last grade A chance that the Bears really gave them, where, you know, and then Hunter Shepard, you know, you can't say enough about what he's done this playoff run. He hasn't allowed more than two goals in a single game through the, you know, Hershey's first two rounds. You know, it seems like for the Bears, there's the makings of something kind of special brewing there. And it was enough to, you know, not only stop a Cinderella team like Hartford that's been so impressive this playoff year, but, you know, really just put the full brakes on them type of thing. So it was interesting to see that series go down in the form of a sweep. I had it going at least four games, maybe all the way to five. So, you know, I think it's going to make for a really interesting Eastern Conference final between Hershey and Rochester, which we're going to get to.
Oh yeah. We're going to talk some Amherst, but I want to get a little, like, just touch on it a little more, because I was kind of endeared with Hartford as they went in, and right, Hershey kind of just locked it down. The Wolfpack kind of had a couple scorers get hot during their run, and they really couldn't get that traction. I didn't hear Johnny Brodzinski's name a whole lot, and I was very kind of, I don't want to say mystified, but Dylan Garand was a guy who really kind of put the Wolfpack on his back for those first couple of rounds. Drops a couple games, and all of a sudden Wolfpack throw in Louis Domingue. I know we talked about that a little bit. How did he? Did it look like it was the right move in Game 3, or do you think they probably should have gone with the guy who got them there?
I personally disagree with it. I see why they did it because, you know, you lose two games, you want to try to go with a shakeup. You have a veteran, possibly NHL caliber goaltender in your roster in Louis Domingue. And to Dylan Grant's credit, none of the losses were his fault, right? For game one, it was an incredible Hershey comeback. You know, you had one goal that was a hefty screen on Logan Day's point blast. Connor McMichael gets a deflection of a wide shot that hits him and goes in. And then, you know, Henrik Borgstrom, not necessarily the most noted goal scorer, but I've seen enough of him to tell you, if you leave him alone in the right spot where, you know, he has a spot where he's comfortable at, right? And they absolutely had that spot open up for him for the overtime winner. You know, the next game, the Bears just kind of powered past him four times and, you know, got some good fortune in the process. And some of those, you know, none of it was really his fault. I mean, it was just more that the Bears, I think, played a more complete game than Hartford did, where they were able to manufacture some of those breaks. And then, you know, in game three, you can hardly really blame Louis Domingue. I mean, sure, the statistic categories of, you know, just 13 saves on 16 shots doesn't look good, but all three of those Hershey goals were perfectly executed, either shots or plays. You know, like there was, the opening goal, Vinny Iorio and Lucas Johansson. Again, two guys not noted for goal scoring from the blue line, but they pick corners on it. You know, there's some defensive breakdowns. You know, those guys got a lot of time and space. And, you know, although they're not noted scorers, they're still dangerous when left alone, certainly. And part of the reason why they're highly regarded first and second round picks for Washington. And, you know, and then, you know, what else can you say about third goal? It's a shot, save, rebound. He had no chance on that one either for Garrett Pilon. And, you know, a lot of it just fits the billing. I mean, you know, of what Hershey's been able to accomplish all year long. They have four lines that, you know, can make you pay in rapid succession. And they did, you know, they have a lot of different scores. You know, it was just, it wasn't about what Garand did wrong, but more of what Hartford as a collective, I think, couldn't do right enough, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So, you know, I give Hartford a lot of credit. They really played a physical game, but I think you just see why Hershey was been one of the top dogs for so much of the season. Was that they were able to ratchet it up a notch and, you know, they never looked phased at all. You know, down 2-0 in game one, you know, they poured on the shots and still kind of came on the wrong side, but it didn't look like it phased them at all. You know, they were able to just turn that around. You know, we've had a couple of periods where they've had to just get through it, right? They've been booed off the ice a couple of times and then come back and they're being cheered for, you know, a big goal or a big win, you know, an hour or so later. So, you know, I think it speaks to that both these teams were really good. It was a really good series. Lots, you know, every game was close, but it was just more that, you know, Hershey just kind of had that one extra step above them, I think, that, you know, maybe prevented this from going four games or five even possibly. Because I think if Hartford wins one, best of five is such a, you know, fast-paced type of series that I really do think that, you know, if they had won one, we might be talking about a game five that would have been tomorrow type of thing rather than, you know, a sweep. So, and that's just the nature of the five-game series in some ways, too.
Absolutely. Well, it was a sweep, and Hershey took it to them. They are moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals. Who are they playing? Well, we look over into the North Division bracket. We kind of alluded to earlier the buzzsaw of the Rochester Americans. They've won now six straight games, and they just absolutely tear apart the Toronto Marlies in the North Division Finals. 19 goals for in just three games. Corey, again, you have your pulse there on the Eastern Conference. Were you expecting this result?
Yes and no. I always felt that Rochester was a pretty tough team. I mean, obviously, being on the Bears beat, I only got to see them twice. But it was still back-to-back. They had a, you know, both those games were incredibly close. I mean, Rochester's, similarly to the Bears, you know, a team that I don't think gets phased very easily by, you know, some kind, you know, a deficit or, you know, some struggles early, like in the Syracuse series you alluded to. And it's not a coincidence either that in those six games that Rochester's won, they've scored four or more goals in each of those six games too. So, you know, their offense has really come to life. you know, you even have an X factor going into this Bears series with, you know, the Amerks being able to add a first round pick, you know, then what was it, the 8th or 9th overall pick to their lineup here, you know, just days before this series starts. You almost wonder if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It sounds like a good thing on paper, but you're always just, you know, messing with team chemistry is a tough thing just in general this time of year. But, you know, it's one of those things they could add to it possibly. If, you know, you get a guy that can conquer the AHL pretty quickly in short order, that's a very scary recipe in my book. And so, you know, but you saw it, you know, they were able to outlast Syracuse in overtime in game 5, as insane as that is. And then you look at the Toronto series where they simply just, you know, Toronto just could not stop these guys. They ran them over, you know, all three of those games. Correct me if I'm wrong, Andrew, but I mean, I think they had 7 or more goals in all three of those games, possibly. I'd have to go back and look at that one, but you know, they piled on the goals is basically the, you know, the end of the short of that whole idea there. So, you know, going into the series, then they haven't lost since the Syracuse series, you know, their second game of the playoffs. It's been quite some time. So it's kind of a clash of two superpowers that have also gotten here by tremendously different means, right? Rochester, you know, maybe their Achilles heels that they let up, you know, a few more goals than you maybe like to see. But when you're scoring as many goals as they are, you know, it's hard to argue with that recipe. You know, if you're scoring 8 goals and the other team's scoring 4, you're going to win most of those games. It's hard to score 8 goals in the American Hockey League anymore. So it's a really good clash of superpowers, I think, that have played opposite styles, right? The Bears are not a noted juggernaut in terms of scoring goals, but they've limited their opposition so much that they haven't needed that necessarily. So it's going to be interesting to see how these two teams stack up when the puck drops here. I believe when this episode drops, we may have already had one game of the series play by the time we're talking about this, but nonetheless, it's going to be a great series, I think. The one that has the potential to really go 7 games, I think.
Absolutely. And I just want to point out that Jiří Kulík has played 6 games. Since he's started, since he debuted in the playoffs, Rochester hasn't lost. He's scored in every single game. And this kid, again, I know I've pumped his tires quite a bit on this pod. He's just 19 years old. You throw in a guy like Matthew Savoie in there, and he's not. It's already been stated by Rochester that he's not going to be coming out and playing game 1, but we're on the 7-game series now, so it's not like that first game makes such a huge heavy impact. It's this could be a war. So let's, now that we've kind of talked about each team kind of working their way in, let's look at the head to head here. The oldest teams in the league going at it. I think there's 17 Calder Cups between the two of them. I mean, just talk about adding another chapter to the storybook here, but we've alluded to it. You got on one side a team that really knows how to lock it down, and another on the other side a team that's just been firing rockets left, right, and center and has been just burying teams with just a ludicrous amount of goals. They scored 4, I believe, in game 1, then they scored 7, then they scored 8 in game 3 against Toronto. So after they've just absolutely just buried the Marlies, I asked Zach in the preview to the North Division Finals if the defenders were going to be shaking in their boots looking at Jiří Kulík on the power play. I'm going to ask that same question to you here, Corey. How I think there's a bit of a different dynamic to the Bears than the Marlies, but you got to respect what the magic in that young man's stick.
Wild to consider that, you know, that those two guys we were just talking about there were drafted. You know, Matt Savoie was the 8th or 9th overall pick, if I remember what I read earlier today, right? And Jiří Kulík was at the tail end of the first round of that draft, right? So it's two guys picked the same year, and you arguably have, you know, the higher touted of the two of them. You know, not there's anything wrong with two first rounders like that. You know, that's something that I think that anybody can respect and appreciate and, you know, have a lot of. But for Hershey, you know, it's interesting because I don't know I've seen them get worried about a specific guy. Like during the Charlotte series, for instance, you know, me and, you know, I know a lot of people in Hershey, you know, we think of Charlotte, we think of the 2019 series, which had our special guest, Andrew Podorowski, on that team, too. They had all these weapons, and they still have some remnants of that, in a sense, with, like, you know, Riley Nash wasn't there, but he was there for the earlier playoff series. You know, it's just kind of one of those things where, you know, I, as a fan, fear it for that reason, because I think of those, you know, bad memories that I have there from 2019. And, but, you know, this Bears team, they've not been fazed by anything. If you would have thought they would have gotten fazed by Hartford, you know, you run up and down that roster. They have Johnny Brodzinski, who's so great. You know, Ryan Carpenter, Tanner Fritz, who was electric in the playoffs leading up to this point, and the Bears made him look invisible. Like, you know, I didn't notice him half as much as I did in the, you know, the Providence series and the Springfield series preceding it. So, you know, for the Bears, I think it's, you know, it doesn't matter who the player is. I think the Bears will respect all of those guys and, you know, maybe pay special notice to some of them over others. But in a sense, you know, it kind of speaks to, you know, Hershey's, you know, their own pack mentality of, you know, having four lines that can roll. I mean, they have a pair of first rounders themselves and Connor McMichael and Hendrix LaPierre, you know, centering two of their top lines type of thing. You know, there's just so much to fear with Hershey that if you kind of walk in with Rochester thinking, okay, we're going to beat the bricks off these guys the same way we did Toronto, it's just not going to happen, I don't think. You know, the Bears have a lot of size. They, you know, they have mastered that defensive side of the game. It's going to be a real, you know, it's unstoppable force meeting an immovable object type of thing, right? That's kind of the way I've been describing it so far, is that, you know, you just have these two powerhouses in completely opposite sides of the game. And which one's going to be the one that wins a hockey game? You know, we saw two really close games in the regular season series. You know, Hershey took a 2-1 win in the first game, and then Rochester, you know, showed how resilient they are by coming back from a 3-0 deficit to take a 4-3 shootout win. So, you know, I think it's one of the most up in the air series, but, you know, I do think that Hershey kind of has the edge. Just, you know, I think you kind of go in with the confidence on a defensive first mentality, right? If you're able to, you know, stop some of these guys, you know, Hunter Shepard's been so good. You think back to his experience in the NCAA where, you know, he could have easily been a three-peater at the college level, like we were talking about with Andrew Podorowski possibly too. Unfortunately, certain events conspired to ruin that opportunity for him. But he's a guy that he just seems to get better as the meaning of each game kind of increases. And, you know, you kind of saw that at the college level. It's his game has seemingly translated over to the AHL so well. It's honestly kind of scary to see guys like Mike Vecchione say about him that he kind of scares him, even in a sense, because he, you know, almost seems to look through guys and, you know, really just be that kind of laser focus. You know, some of those quotes have been impressive to see, something you don't really see all the time. So I think it's just going to be a very interesting playoff series, just top to bottom, for those reasons.
Yeah, I'm kind of following along with your thinking here, and sort of like, you know, unstoppable force, immovable object. For me, I think the key isn't going to be Hershey shutting down Rochester's big guns. In fact, I think it's going to be the other way around. I think it's going to have to be Rochester trying to stop a nosebleed against the Bears, because I think we're all very aware of Hershey's acumen defensively. But, I mean, you've mentioned a lot, you know, the LaPierre and McMichael, Scarbosa, Vecchione. I mean, talk about guys who can put the puck in the net. Where I think Rochester, they've been very reliant on their offense, that I don't want to say that they've kind of left the defense in the wind, but four goals against in that Toronto series. I mean, I know we kind of talk it up like it was an absolute blowout, and I mean, it kind of was. When you give up 7-8 goals here and there, like, yeah, that's not a great look. But still, the Rochester is prone to giving up goals in bunches, and momentum is such a huge thing this time of the year that I think Hershey can kind of get rolling downhill. They can turn that snowball into an avalanche real quick. And at that point, it doesn't really matter if, you know, you get Kulik potting a couple of power play goals if there's four or five behind him on the other end. So I think, you know, everything's kind of keyed in on Rochester scoring and Hershey not. But I think it's going to be the other way around. It's going to be Rochester stopping them and Hershey putting the puck in the net that I think is going to turn this around. I, you know, I like the matchup in net. I like Hershey's depth. I don't really want to call that the Bears are going to win it right now, but you kind of see where I'm going with this. And you have your pulse on this one a little more. So I'll ask you for your honest and completely unbiased analysis. Who is taking the first ticket to the Calder Cup final?
I mean, obviously, I like you said, I'm trying to be unbiased here as I sit here on the air in my Hershey Bears jersey. Not, you know, superstitious at all, but just a little superstitious. But I honestly love the Bears in this series, but for different reasons. And it's kind of just, you know, from watching these guys play and, you know, game three against Hartford, as well as, you know, in a sense, game three against Charlotte for Hershey, you know, are kind of my roadmap to these series, right? And, you know, you're probably saying, Corey, game three against Charlotte was the only game they've lost in this playoff so far. And, you know, but my takeaway from that game was kind of that, you know, Hershey played perhaps one of its worst games offensively that I think I've seen in some time, especially in these playoffs. You know, they were fighting the puck, you know, just not a whole lot was going right for them. But they still only let up two goals, and it was a one-goal game. You know, it was a 2-1 loss. But, you know, if the Bears even connected on just one of their chances, it's a 2-2 game. It goes to overtime, and you get, you know, like you saw at Hartford game one, you know, you get a Henrik Borgstrom kind of goal in overtime type of thing. You know, it could have easily been another sweep the other way, possibly. So I feel like Hershey's just, you know, this is going to be their biggest test yet. Let's, you know, not kid ourselves here that, you know, Rochester got here for good reason. And, you know, we kind of talked about how, you know, the North Division's kind of been more known for, you know, having some high scoring, you know, high flying teams, whereas the Atlantic's kind of been the goalie division in a sense, right? So, you know, it's kind of almost that trend kind of come to life in the form of a playoff series. And, you know, you look at Hershey, I talked a lot about in the last couple of rounds that, you know, the Bears would need to exercise some demons, right? And Rochester's kind of a different form of demon. I think that the last one I talked about was, you know, Hartford was in 2015. They beat Hershey, you know, Charlotte 2019. Even Providence was there in that mix as a team to beat the Bears in 2017. The Bears haven't won against Rochester. Before the show came on, I was trying to find the last time the Bears beat Rochester in a playoff series. I couldn't find it. I'm back on my tabs back on 1971, and I still haven't found it yet. Like, it's been a long time. The all-time record is only 6-1 in Rochester's favor. And I say only because you'd think that the two oldest teams in the AHL have met more than seven times all time. But it was insane. You know, Rochester had a run from the late 80s all the way up to the year 2000 where they beat the Bears, I think, in four straight playoff series in that, you know, over that period of time there. So it's kind of nuts. And, you know, one of my favorite fun facts I found for you, Andrew, was that in the last time that these teams met in the year 2000, back at the old barn, Hershey Park Arena, in the lineup for the Bears that year was Nick Bootland, who is now behind the bench in his first year as an assistant coach for the Bears. So he has a little bit more intimate knowledge of what it's like to, you know, be on that side of it to, you know, show for these guys here too. And, you know, the other bit of trivia I have for you is that the Giant Center was opened up with this matchup back in October of 2002. So, you know, not a lot of history, but some interesting history, certainly. So, again, it's going to be great. It's going to be cool to see these two historic franchises really go at it for the first time, really, in the modern era of the AHL. But like you said, I think that the Bears kind of have that constructed team to be a really tough one. It's a little bit of a different flavor than, say, like the 2010 Bears team or the 2016 even. It's kind of somewhere in between those two. But I just love what this Bears team has done all season. And, you know, I really think that they have the complete effort that we've wanted to see for so long from a Bears team to, you know, make this happen.
I still didn't get a prediction out of you.
Well, I'll say Hershey in six. I think it's going to be back and forth. I won't discount the Rochester fan base to make those two games, especially the fact that they got a weekend game on a Saturday and B, they got a holiday game on Memorial Day too. Yeah. So, you know, they don't have a hard time getting 10,000 fans in that building, it seems like. So I don't expect them to have a single problem getting 10,000. I don't think it's going to be quite a sellout in Hershey. I was looking at the ticket map, you know, bit of a tough ask, unfortunate scheduling if you're Hershey, to, you know, have a Tuesday, Thursday home game set. But the Bears have a good habit of making a crowd of, you know, 7,000 feel like 14,000 sometimes. So, you know, I don't have any doubt that it's going to be a loud environment in Hershey for these two games. Rally towels and all.
Absolutely. Well, I admire your heartfelt analysis. Even, I won't even say that there was any bias in there. That was total no chocolate and white glasses, just looking black and white from an unbiased mind. I can appreciate that you can separate the two entities from all the Hershey apparel that you got going on in there, which I fully endorse, by the way. But that's what we got looking over on the eastern side of the bracket. Let's flip the page and look over into the other time zones that exist on this continent. We'll start with the central, which is kind of my domain here, if you couldn't tell, Wolves and Griffins. Neither one has been playing since it's been a while, but we in the Central Division Final, we had the Milwaukee Admirals, which is my preseason pick to make it out of this division, and the Texas Stars. When they go the distance, they go five games, and for good reason. I mean, geez, you talk about a couple of absolutely deep and talented rosters, and you know, it's at the end of the day, game five, Milwaukee is just too much for them. I mean, they came out and hammered Texas. It was 4-0 after one period. And I mean, the Stars responded. They pushed back as best they could, got a couple of goals in there, but it just wasn't enough. 4-2, which I don't want to say it's disappointing for the Stars, but you come back in game four and a double overtime win, you kind of feel like momentum's right on their side. And what do they do after an emotional win like that? They just kind of go out and lay an egg in the first one. And it was just you got to give credit to the Milwaukee Admirals, because there was so many plays in this series where the Stars just didn't look like themselves. I mean, there's such a core identity of this team is the strength of their blue line. And Milwaukee just took that pancake and flipped it all around and burnt it to a crisp on the other end, because this forecheck from the Admirals was menacing and creating turnovers all over the place and just creating all sorts of havoc for the Stars that I don't know. I don't know if they just weren't ready for it, or if again, it's kind of mystifying. I thought that the Stars were, again, you go out in a game five, it's kind of, you know, that game seven feel, anything can really happen. But I was expecting a very close, tight series, and that's what we got. But I just wasn't expecting the Stars to kind of get punched in the mouth like that. You know, I mean, I guess that's what happens when you have a couple of heavyweights. And I tuned in to the size of the Admirals that they and they had to be menacing on that forecheck in order to disrupt this team, and that's kind of what ended up happening. And I mean, this is the welcome party for Joakim Kamel. I mean, this guy was just a thorn in Texas' side. Not only him, but Luke Evangelista. I'm old enough to remember when the Nashville system was an absolute black hole for forward prospects. It is not the case anymore. I mean, you look at that Admirals team and some of the younger players up there in Nashville, and they have a bright future ahead of them. They play this game the right way. They go and like they go in and they buy into the system, and they battle in those greasy areas, and they get those second and third chance opportunities that ultimately have made me look a little smarter for a day, as the Admirals are the ones moving on here in the Central. And it's, I don't want to say that I kind of expected it, but early on in the season, you know, this was a team that was full on for Bear, aiming for that number one spot. And then trade deadline comes through in Nashville. They sell the farm, couple of injuries, and you have, I think that what's really going to help this Milwaukee squad is seeing all those guys like Kiefer Sherwood and Phil Tomasino, Spencer Stastny, Luke Evangelista was up there in Nashville, and these guys were out there playing playoff hockey for the Predators. This is a team that sold heavily at the deadline and just missed the wild card by a couple points because these guys were just like, okay, we are going to drag the corpse of this franchise into the playoffs if it killed them. And it almost did. But that would have been an incredible story to have seen that. And I probably would have been way more entertaining than watching Winnipeg just get dummied by Vegas in the first round. But I digress. You take that kind of experience at that level and then you apply it down here. This is going to be a very tough out for whoever they're going to play. And by the way, Corey, who are they going to play?
We're going to be playing the Coachella Valley Firebirds in this Western Conference final.
That's right. We have a guest for you guys to talk a little bit about this series. So we are going to just get right on into that. All right. Now we have a very special guest on this week's episode. Since their last appearance on the Holy Grail in episode 13, our guest won the John B. Sullenberger Trophy as the leading point getter in the AHL for the second time in his career. Keeping up with the theme, he also hoisted a second Calder Cup there with the Chicago Wolves and parlayed that performance into a one-way deal with the Seattle Kraken. Now, starting this year off on another tear in Coachella Valley, an unfortunate injury almost looked to end his season prematurely. Our guest instead made an improbable comeback in the Pacific Division Finals, slaying the giant that was the Calgary Wranglers with the biggest goal in Coachella Firebirds history with Game 5's overtime winner. It is my honor to welcome back to the pod, Andrew Podorolski. Andrew, thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That was quite the intro there.
I mean, you know, it's a big guest. You got to have the big spotlight when it matters, you know? So yeah. I want to go back to that goal in Game 5 there real quick. You know, overtime and the deciding game. And Jesper Froden hits you with that great pass after a second attempt entry over the blue line. You're coming into the zone on the far side. You made sure that Jesper saw you calling for the puck there. Were you kind of thinking goal the whole time you skated in, or was it just a matter of seeing a window and hitting it?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, hockey's such a fast read and react game. I definitely wanted that puck and saw the lane. And, you know, it was a pretty tight series the whole time around, and Calgary doesn't give much. They're a good team for obvious reasons. And, you know, I saw the little opening, wanted the puck, and shot it, and then kind of blacked out from there.
Andrew, rewinding to January, right before the All-Star break, you ended up on the mend and it's announced to be 4 to 6 months. What was your mindset initially? And, you know, what was your thought that you were going to make it back? Or did you have any doubt that you might be able to play again this season just based on that time frame?
Yeah, it's definitely a crazy process. You know, once they give me the timeline, I start, you know, doing the math and trying to figure stuff out. And you have so much free time on your hands. I was pretty much doing research on everything I could do possible to speed up the healing process. And, you know, you can only do that so much. You got to let your body heal and let it do its thing. But there's definitely different things you can do to help speed it up and make sure you're healing properly. And I did a ton of different stuff. I got to credit all my trainers. I got to credit my wife putting up with a lot of my stuff. I definitely wasn't in the best of moods right at the start of it. But you know, so many different things went on, and I eventually, you know, made it back. But yeah, there's certainly doubt, and you know, our team had to face 3 elimination games before I was even back in the lineup. So I definitely sweat those ones out, and I was the biggest fan in the arena those nights. But it was a crazy process, and for it to all come together, and you know, to get back and play and win against Calgary was so cool.
That's awesome. And during your recovery, you know, as you said that your teammates in Coachella Valley are rolling, they hit 100 points, had the second best record in the league. Obviously, you're still around the team, but how did you maintain relationships and chemistry with the guys while they're piling up the points and, you know, while you're seeking kind of the end to get ultimate goal to get back into the lineup?
Yeah, I'd say that's the hard part that a lot of people don't really understand. You know, when you're not playing, you kind of get separated from the team for a little bit. You know, you're coming in at different times than the guys. You're not going on the road with them. So it definitely gets lonely for some times, and it's hard. But, The silver lining in it for me was, you know, I got to spend time with my young son a little bit and do stuff like that. And, you know, just try my best to maybe get out to dinner with the guys or have some guys over once in a while when they have time off or at home. And, you know, just do my best. And once I started getting closer and started skating, I started sitting in on a lot of meetings and, you know, tried to get back in the swing of things as best as I could. So it's definitely not easy, and it was a long road, but it's super rewarding to come back and be able to play.
I know one new hobby that you picked up while you were on the men there was you did a couple games up in the booth with Evan Pivnik doing color commentary. You know, is that something that you always want to do maybe after you hang the skates up?
That's definitely something I never put a single thought into before the first game I got hurt. We were on the road still in Iowa, and Piv asked me to go up there and do it, and it's kind of just like a funny thing. And then, you know, some guys said I was pretty good at it, so I tried it a couple more times and then started to get the hang of it. And, you know, Piv and I have great chemistry, and he's a funny guy and really easy to get along to. He set me up for a lot of, you know, my stuff and comments and helped me out along the way. So it was something that's really fun. You know, who knows what I'll do after hockey. I'd keep all doors open. You know, you never know, but it's certainly a fun thing to do to kill time because it's not easy watching games when you're hurt.
Yeah, for sure. But then, you know, finally game three rolls around and you're cleared to play, you know, front of the home crowd and all that. I'm sure you were pumped for that. But, you know, first off, talk about the fans that you've had here in Coachella for their first season with the Birds and kind of what you were thinking as you skated out there for your first shift back in almost 4 months.
Yeah, it's crazy for people who haven't been out here yet or seen our arena. Our arena's state of the art, brand new, awesome. And then our fans are second to none, and they're super passionate about it. And, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot going on in the Valley for the last however many years. And it just seems like the fans have adopted us, and we've loved it. And, you know, they love coming to games, and it's so fun to play in front of them. It seriously doesn't feel like an AHL environment here. And we like to think that, you know, our home ice record speaks for itself on how much we love playing at home. And it was certainly a unique season where we started on the road in Seattle living out of a hotel for the first 2 months. And then the whole second half of the year, we had a ton of home games. So it ended up working in our favor. And, you know, we love it. And it's a really cool atmosphere in the AHL, that's for sure.
You're going back to that series that you guys just got done with the Calgary Wranglers. They're such a fierce team, and you know the matchup was lived up to the billing in so many ways. As you know, each game was a little bit different. You'd have some goaltending duels like Game 3 with the triple overtime, and then you'd have, you know, a high scoring game like Game 5 was. Tell us about the, like, you know, how the back and forth between those two squads, and you know what it was like, you know, being on the ice for those kinds of shifts and those kinds of, you know, different feelings for games.
Yeah, it's certainly crazy, you know, being out for almost 4 months and then stepping into a team like Calgary is a tough task, but they're a great team for a reason. And, you know, it was pretty fitting that we ended up going game five in overtime. You know, they're just back and forth games. Both goaltenders are studs. We all knew that. And then that third period of Game 5 was just, I think, everybody, you know, wanted to win with nerves, everything going on. You know, a deciding game was pretty crazy. I've said before, it took like 10 years off my life. You know, we score, they score, we score, they score. Then they take a lead, we tie it. It was pure chaos. And, you know, our building was rocking, so it was just really cool. I'm sure from fans' perspective, they all loved it. But we were definitely sweating that one out. And you know, obviously super thankful we came out on top.
For sure. Now, these Firebirds have been pushed to the brink in each and every playoff series that they've been a part of, but they found a way to bounce back, and now you're walking into the Western Conference Finals. So, you know, what can you tell us about this locker room that's made them so resilient in the face of adversity?
I just think, you know, the team we have, we're a pretty deep team. We have four lines who can go and score on any given night. You know, we got Joey Decord in that, who's unbelievable, and a solid decor. And I think that's what it takes, you know, to make it this far in the league, and especially in playoffs. You can't really have any holes in your lineup because, you know, there's only four teams left and you'll get exposed. So I just think the depth, you know, the veteran leadership we have, and then all our rookies are outstanding and playing great hockey and have transitioned so well into the pro game. And So the combination between that, you know, makes for a good team. And, you know, job's not done here. We still got two more series to go.
Yeah, I know one big difference between, you know, last year up there in Chicago to Coachella. I know for a fact you were out in Palm Springs in the middle of December driving fairways and dropping birdies like nobody's business. Did the extra practice in the winter kind of help your stroke? And who on the team do you find yourself battling for skins?
I mean, we got a lot of guys on our team who love to play golf, so it's pretty competitive no matter who you find. But I certainly have gotten to enjoy that on my off time here, and it's obviously a really cool thing to do and, you know, take your mind off of hockey when we get some free time. But and there's no shortage of courses out here, so it's really cool. But I had a really good battle the other day with Max McCormick. I have to give him a bunch of shots, so I'll put that in there. you know, Cole Lind, Cameron Hughes, they're both pretty good players as well on our team. So, but honestly, any given day, we're a super competitive team. We're always battling in practice. Whenever it's a small ice game or we're out on the course, there's always something on the line, and we're always competing against each other. And you know, I think that definitely plays a sense in why we've been so successful this year, because, you know, we're all competitive and always want to win. So I think that translates a lot.
Andrew, one more for you here. This is your third straight deep playoff run with three different teams. I'm obviously stretching it back to, you know, 2019 with one of those there. And, you know, even in three different time zones, but it's kind of the same level of success here. You know, the DNA of a lot of the teams you've been on has been very similar. What have you learned about, you know, the recipe for creating a championship team, and, you know, what sets that kind of team apart in your mind?
Just touching back on like what I said earlier, I think the depth, all three teams that I've been on the previous two where we've won, we've had great depth, great goaltending, you know, four lines you can score and good D. But I'd say now just being here and just having the confidence of knowing what it takes to win. And, you know, sometimes I think other teams, maybe there's doubt in their mind, you know, you never know. And I just try to help in that sense, and being here before and knowing what it takes, and, you know, just telling guys and making sure that they believe as well that, you know, we're more than capable of winning. You know, any of the four teams right now are capable of winning. It just comes down to, you know, who believes in themselves, who sticks to their game plan, and who wants it more, and who's going to work hard. So, you know, I just try my best to spread that message around the room. And, you know, obviously we have a coach in Dan Bylsma who's won a Stanley Cup. He obviously knows what it takes as well. So he does a great job preparing us and preparing the guys. So I think all those things together are huge.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, made quite an impression in the couple games that you've had here already in the playoffs, and your pedigree speaks for itself. I know there's a lot of fans in Chicago that are rooting for you to go get your Kobe, go get your Jordan, go for the three-peat. So from us here at Field Pass, we wish you all the best in that chase for number three.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate it, guys.
Yep. Take care, Andrew.
All right. See you later.
Second verse, just as good as the first. I don't know. I'm a little biased, but I love having Potsy on. He's done it all at this level. He's always a great interview, great guy to talk to. And, I mean, if his personality isn't infectious and gets you to just want to smile and go out and play hockey, I don't know. You got to go to the doctor and get yourself checked up, because, I mean, just talk about 100% certified beauty, that guy. So, you know, Potsy and the Birds, they're heading on to the Western Conference Finals to take on the Milwaukee Admirals. And it's kind of very similar to what you're looking over in the East, where you have a bit of, you know, two teams with two different identities kind of going head-to-head. Coachella, you heard it there from Potsy, they're deep. They have speed, they got skill, they got goaltending. And on the other side, you got Milwaukee, who's just going to be coming at you with just clubs and hammers, and they're just going to beat you senseless out in the corners and everything. But do not just think that this is just another, you know, grime it up grease ball team, because the Admirals, they can fly too, man. You think a guy like Phil Tomasino or Luke Evangelista is going to be out there skating through the mud? I don't think so. This is going to be one of the tougher ones, I think, to call, even though, like, this Firebirds team just got loaded in that series. The Seattle Kraken get eliminated. They get Ty Cartier. They get Jesper Froden. And, oh, by the way, just Andrew Podorowski is inserted and lined up through the series. You know, I mean, what kind of a bigger X factor could you possibly ask for? So, you know, this team looked a little vulnerable getting pushed to the edges by Colorado and even by Tucson. Just like that, on the spin of a coin, they look like they're I would call them the favorites in this the last four. One of the only team left standing that hit 100 points, just knocked out the other team that hit 100 points in this season. Like I said, they're deep. They basically just added another first line in the middle of this series. They get through. They have the guy. I mean, like I said, Potts is going for his Kobe here. Is 3 for 3, and it's. But like I said, you look at that experience that the Milwaukee players had up in Nashville. I mean, just a not just one or two guys. I mean, you're talking about a group of them. They had 7 of their top 10 scorers for a time up in Nashville. Like, that's not an exaggeration, people. I can do the math and I can show you the numbers and everything. So you have two contrasting styles in this. You have Yaroslav Askarov, who might be the bluest chip of prospects in there, going up against Joey Decord, who just, you know, casually saves 60 shots in a triple overtime game and went pound for pound with the AHL MVP and that and Dustin Wolf. So you can take him with a matchup up against anybody. Where do you find a weakness in any of these two teams, Corey?
Yeah, Andrew, I'm not sure where you find the weakness for either of these two teams. I mean, like you said about the Eastern Conference, it's two teams that play a very unique style of play, right? One guy that's kind of, you know, come to my mind a few times, you know, it's just because he's a familiar face a little bit there too, that I think fits right in with that style of play, is Isaac Ratcliffe, a guy they got for, you know, essentially nothing from Philadelphia at the trade deadline. You know, it was one of the few things we were begging for the Flyers management to do, and they trade a guy away for basically nothing. A former first rounder at that, but, you know, he's a big bodied physical guy that I think really fits the mold that Milwaukee's playing into a T in a lot of ways. And they did a great job in that series of making a very talented team like Texas, you know, number one, struggle, but number two, you know, have a hard time playing to their strengths, right? They made a guy like Riley Barber, who I'm quite familiar with from his time in Hershey, you know, a big game kind of guy, you know, look pretty much invisible. You know, it was very hard for him to play to his strengths, which is to have a great shot. He snipes a lot of goals, you know, very well known for that side of things. You know, you didn't notice him very much in that series. You didn't notice a lot of Texas's big guys. And, you know, that was kind of their strength. They'd been such a solid, you know, well-rounded club all season long that they were able to kind of turn that on its head and turn a disadvantage into an advantage. So I think that, you know, for both these teams, although I would say the Coachella Valley is, you know, in my opinion, probably the favored series or team on paper, I would probably say, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Milwaukee pushes this to the limit and, you know, can even turn, you know, do the same thing. Then they have the Andrew Podorowskis of the world on their team, but will they be as open as they were against, you know, maybe a team like Calgary, which is still kind of surreal to say in some ways that, you know, Calgary is not was not it this year, because it seemed like that, you know, not that we were already penciling them in the Calder Cup finals, but a lot of ways the way they played, we talked about, you know, Dustin Wolf for seemingly the entire season, and, you know, now he's on the golf course, and it's just a very surreal thing to say. And, you know, so, you know, with Coachella Valley, they bended but did not break 3 times now, and, you know, that says a lot too. You know, it certainly is interesting when you compare a team like Coachella Valley to Hershey, where, you know, they almost have twice as many games played as the Bears exactly, just due to that, and, you know, some the unfortunate side of finishing second but still having to play the play-in round, you know, the great oddities of the playoff format here, certainly. But, you know, it speaks to their resilience, and, you know, they have that little X factor there that you like to talk about in terms of, you know, championship teams that belong so well to Andrew Podorowski teams type of thing, right? So I don't really see how either team has a clear path to win, other than they just need to keep playing to their strengths, you know, just try to be the more well-rounded of the two teams. I think that Coachella Valley has the skill factor, but, you know, you just can't see the, you could just see the never say die attitude about Milwaukee that's going to propel them to some wins here too. So I could see this really going all the way to 6 or 7. I'm sure Coachella Valley, and they might want to just keep that streak going of going the distance. It's worked out for them so far.
Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, you bring up the good point about Riley Barber being shut down. I mean, you know, I think Potts' presence and everything is huge for the Firebirds, but, you know, in terms of point production, he had only the biggest goal in Firebirds history, but still, you know, I think for a guy like Potts, I don't want to say you're expecting a bit more. He guy just got back off for 4 months, but, and you look at you know, the guys like Cole Lind and Max McCormick, Jeremy McKenna, Alexander True, Riker Evans that are all at the tops of the scoring. Now, granted, maybe that has something to do with pushing every single series to the distance and just getting as many games as possible. I think your hero is probably going to be someone like John Leonard or Billy Pettman if you're Coachella, or it's going to be someone who when all the focus and attention is going to be on Evangelista and Lind or McCormick, that someone's gonna get open with a chance and they're gonna bury it, and they'll be a hero in all folklore of either Milwaukee, who I don't even remember the name of that guy on that radio station who said something about, you know, you don't have a life if you care about the Milwaukee Admirals. Let me tell you something. You don't have a life if you're out here trying to rag on an AHL team and these fans and these guys and the 90% of the league that participates in the AHL and in their playoffs and everything. Where do you think they learn to win up there in the NHL? They learn it here. And when your future of your franchise is up in here and developing and learning how to win in the playoffs in there, and you're going to rag on these guys and then these fans for having a heart. And hey, guess what? They're watching hockey. What are the Nashville Predators doing right now? You tell me that. Oh, all right. That's my rant on that one.
And you don't understand hockey without telling me you don't understand hockey. You know, that's kind of what the unknowledgeable people say, you know, people that don't know what hockey's about say about the AHL. They say it doesn't matter because it's the minors. You know, it matters so much. You know, winning in the AHL is so important. And, you know, it just goes to show how much people really don't know if they're saying that about AHL hockey. And it was irritating to see that narrative still pressed by some guy that apparently has a following. But, you know, to me, I just know him as a clown now. So, you know, that's where we're going to leave it at that, because it's not worth even giving him attention.
Exactly. You can just get him his big red rubbery shoes and we'll just leave it at that. So as we turn back again to our, you know, our wonderful fans who are very knowledgeable in hockey, unlike some radio hosts. I've been leaning heavily on Milwaukee pretty much since the preseason. I love their moves of bringing in guys like Kiefer Sherwood and Jordan Gross that have ultimately led them to this position that they're in now. And, you know, I wouldn't be remiss to say if they might have been early odds at Calder Cup favorites back in October. I mean, I know I've been pumping their tires for quite a bit. But I can't root against – I can't bet against Potts. You're telling me the back-to-back winner of the Cup, the two-time scoring champion, the guy who's done everything at this level, is going to come up short here? I can see going 7 games, but if that happens and I see Pot scoring another OT winner, you might as well just give him the cup at that point. I'm sorry about Hershey, but then at that point you can just label him Team of Destiny. I gotta go Coachella in 7 on this one.
I think that's fair. I would also lean towards Coachella Valley, but just to play devil's advocate, I think I'm gonna make the case for Milwaukee in 7. And the reason I think is that, you know, they play such a stellar, you know, all around frustrating game that if they can make a guy like Riley Barber and, you know, some of the top guys in Texas disappear, I think they're going to try to, you know, do that as much as they can. Now, I think that, you know, to their credit, Coachella Valley is maybe a little deeper in their terms of their lineup. Like you said, there's a lot of room for, you know, some lesser known guys to really take the reins in that series and, you know, become the guys in that respect. So I do think that it's going to be harder for them, but you know, they play such an in your face kind of smash mouth kind of style of hockey where they just make your life miserable on the ice, you know, force turnovers. You know, I think that Coachella Valley's, you know, experienced some weakness at points where they've, you know, maybe given up a couple extra goals maybe than they should have. You know, they followed up some, you know, some really great moments with, you know, maybe a clunker and, you know, some winning by the skin of their teeth. And, you know, Milwaukee's kind of a team that, you know, has kind of done the opposite, right? They had a, you know, pretty convincing series win over Texas. You know, they played very well in that series. I think that they have the potential to be the team that, you know, maybe catches Coachella Valley, you know, feeling the effects of the maybe some fatigue there in a sense. And, you know, they maybe pounce on it in the latter stages of the series. You know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that, you know, that one of these teams could just, you know, find that magic thing and take this in five or six, right? But I think it has all the makings of a seven-game series, and it's just going to be whose style comes out in one shift, two shifts, three shifts, maybe even overtime, possibly. Like you said, in overtime, if I'm Milwaukee, you don't want to go to overtime, right? Because there's Andrew Podorowski and the other team. You saw the goal. They all saw the goal. We all saw it, you know, like it's one of those things you just don't want to because the script writes itself in a sense. So, and you know, for Milwaukee, I think they've kind of gotten to this point by not playing that kind of risque kind of style. You know, they've done a good job. You know, they're the score four goals and win over Texas kind of team, right, in the first period. So, you know, I think that it's really going to be that kind of series where I think if Milwaukee can get up on them early, like they did, you know, I really like them in that series. But the longer you let Coachella Valley hang around, the more chance you have that you're going to get burned by Andrew Podorowski. It's just fate.
We stand Pots on this podcast, if you couldn't tell. We should almost call it the Pots Cast, but that's...
I like that.
Again, it's when the guys accomplish everything at this level, it's hard to root against them. Anyway, that's our final four, man. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty, and I'm not talking about Sam Weismer's fantastic work here. I'm talking about, like, this is it. We're four teams, seven-game series now. This is starting to get to for all the marbles, and I would ask you, I guess, who do you think – I was going to ask who's your biggest surprise team at this point, but I think of the four, I think Rochester is probably the, I don't even want to say an outlier because they've been, you know, an incredible team all year, but I mean, so much attention has been paid to, I mean, Hershey's been dominating in the Atlantic. Milwaukee's been hanging around for so long. Rochester's been kind of like quietly hanging around in that North Division, but I mean, it's been so much Toronto early on that now it's like, it feels like they just kind of burst onto the scene here, but this is a team that's been simmering all year, and I think they're getting hot at a good time. But I mean, unless you think Coachella is a big surprise at this stage, but it doesn't sound like you did.
Well, I mean, with Coachella Valley, you always kind of knew that series was going to come down to who could win between them and Calgary, right? Like, it was just the writing was on the wall for that to be a series in the division final at some point. And, you know, to its credit, it's probably been the most entertaining series of the entire playoffs so far. Because, you know, I mean, anytime you get to a game five in overtime situation, you know, it doesn't sound quite as pretty as saying game seven, but, you know, it was just that kind of effort, that kind of, you know, just two superpowers going at it, right? It's hard to argue otherwise. With Rochester, as you said, they were surprised, but I think it's just because of the fact that the North Division was just kind of a wide open, you know, shot for any of these teams to possibly get hot. Like you said, Rochester got hot at a good time. You know, it looked like it was going to be all Toronto. We were guaranteed Toronto, it seemed like, for so long. And then Toronto, unfortunately, you know, kind of got gutted at the trade deadline. They just weren't the same Toronto team. And, you know, to their credit, they, you know, they pushed through the first series that they had to play in and, you know, got to that point of the division final. But, you know, Rochester, like you said, they just caught fire. They did enough to, you know, to win that series. And, you know, obviously enough was sweeping in this respect here too. So, you know, I don't think that, to me, I do think that, you know, you were on Milwaukee pretty much from the get-go, if memory serves me correctly. So, you know, I'm not so surprised about them. You know, I've been pumping Hershey's tires all season long, as I will do every year pretty much. It has to be pretty bad for me to, you know, not be in that respect. But, you know, I'm not surprised that the Bears were able to get here. But I do think those teams are surprised in their own unique circumstance. And it speaks to, you know, how all four divisions in the AHL are almost their own leagues in a sense, right? Because it's like they've, you know, they play each other so much. So much of their schedules are comprised of interdivisional matchups. And you just wonder how it's going to play out in a playoff series. And we've gotten so much entertainment value out of those two divisions specifically. You know, Rochester wins game five in overtime. Both them and Coachella have that in common, that they have that kind of, you know, those kind of magic goals you dream of as a fan of either of those two franchises. So, you know, I think that it's kind of going to be expected versus maybe unexpected in some ways. I don't think anybody expected Andrew Podorolski to suit up for Coachella Valley in these playoffs, maybe except for him, because he was working so hard at, you know, like he was saying in his interview there, cutting down that time to make it 4 months instead of, you know, six possibly. So give him a lot of credit, give Coachella a lot of credit for really rolling with their depth for so long. And, you know, again, it's just going to be who's the deepest team. I like Coachella and Hershey in that respect. But, you know, you can't discredit what Milwaukee and Rochester have done all season long. So I think we're just in for a really good thrill ride here. I'm so excited to be at both of the games here to open up the series in Hershey Tuesday and Thursday. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Corey's going to be in there bleeding chocolate and white. So that's our final four. That's our show for this week. So if you'd like to hear or see more of us, please subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. I personally use Spotify. You can use whatever you want, but also make sure that you follow us on Twitter at The Holy Grail. If you don't know by now, that's spelled G-R-A-H-L. You can check out all of Field Pass Hockey's other podcasts. Join Matthew Harding and Jason Mowles as they break down the ECHL's Wichita Thunder and chat with some of the league's legendary players. The Rolling Thunder podcast airs bi-weekly on Field Pass Hockey. You can also check out Syracuse Speaks with Alexandra Ackerman. Syracuse Speaks is a Syracuse Crunch-centric podcast that focuses on maintaining a balanced perspective in the ever-shifting world of minor league hockey. And on behalf of all of us here at the Holy Grail, that's myself and Corey, we hope you have an amazing week, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
This has been the Holy Grail Podcast. Have a question or topic suggestion? Hit us up on Twitter or drop us an email. For the latest news across the American Hockey League and the rest of minor league hockey, download the Field Pass Hockey app, now available in the Apple and Android app stores.